your home for the light. AM 850, WWJC, Duluth.
Live from Duluth, this is Northland Notebook, on air, online, and on demand. On today's program, how America lost her way, and the lost art of true beauty. It's Tuesday's broadcast. My first guest today is Tom Pockin, chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission. He is the former head of the Republican Party of Texas, a lawyer, a Vietnam vet, and he served in the Nixon and Reagan administrations. And he's the author of the new book, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. Tom Pockin, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Ted, great to be with you.
Good to have you on the program this morning. So tell me a little bit about your work with President Nixon.
Well, I served in Vietnam. My friends joke I was an oxymoron, an Army intelligence officer in Vietnam, but I had been national chairman of the College of Republicans in the mid-1960s before enlisting in the Army and going to Vietnam. And so when I came home from Vietnam, I was offered a number of positions in the Nixon administration and wound up being associate director of the White House Fellowship Program and on the White House staff. But I left in 1971, frankly, because I was disenchanted as a conservative with the Nixon administration and wound up being out of government until coming back on the Reagan transition team after President Reagan won in 1980, and then being on his White House staff and running a federal agency after he selected me as director of action for 4 years, the first term of the Reagan administration.
My older brother worked in the Nixon White House in the communications department.
Well, did he work with Jeb Magruder or
yes.
Herb Klein or... those were some of the ones back there. I actually was working on the legal counsel staff, even though I wasn't a lawyer at the time, because I'd been with the White House Fellowship Program and turned down a position. It was a promotion, but I just was, I'd read a book called Catch the Falling Flag by Richard Whalen, who had been part of the Nixon entourage and had become disenchanted. And that was my sense of things, that it was there was something wrong with the administration, and of course ultimately things would fall apart. You'd have Watergate and a lot of other problems. But I just decided I'm going back to Texas, and I'm glad I did.
Why did you stick with the Republican Party?
Well, I joined the Republican Party. I was a Texas Democrat going to Washington, but I was
really?
A conservative, and I had read Barry Goldwater's Conscience of a Conservative, and I became part of that sort of those young conservatives who were got involved in the Republican Party in the early 1960s. And as I write in the book, I thought I was joining the losing side, but I had agreed with the principles articulated in the Conscience of a Conservative. I was an anti-communist. I was concerned about the growth of government, and I also thought that Barry Goldwater was speaking for what he called the forgotten Americans, middle-class taxpayers who don't have lobbyists in Washington or aren't looking for loopholes in the law. And I thought the Republican Party potentially could be the vehicle for Main Street Americans, and it was in the Rockefeller versus Goldwater versus Rockefeller race, and it was when Ronald Reagan won in 1980 against George Herbert Walker Bush. But afterwards, when Reagan left the scene, we began to trend back towards the non-conservatives masquerading as conservatives, and too much influenced by kind of the Wall Street crowd and the big big business special interests.
How does one discern the difference between between the true conservative and those that maybe are just conservative on face value?
Well, it's a great question, Ted. And I've done many interviews with regard to my new book, Bringing America Home, and I talk in the book about the hijacking of the conservative movement. I mean, Karl Rove is now a spokesman on Fox News, writes for the Wall Street Journal. He was a Nixon Republican, fought Ronald Reagan, fought conservatives in Texas. Doesn't have any strong convictions in terms of either social or economic issues. He's motivated by, you know, what's the smartest thing to do in order to get elected or win re-election, and yet he's a spokesman for American conservatives. That's one of the points I try to make in the book. I mean, in the Bush administration, they said, we've got a new concept. It's called big government conservatism, and literally, they bragged about it, and I have a chapter in the book called Big Government Conservatism is an Oxymoron. It's simply watered down big government liberalism, and it ultimately is bound to fail as it is failing right now, or set us up for the most radical regime in American history to come to power, the Obama administration. And then second group that really came to power were a group of neoconservative ideologues who began to dominate American foreign policy, and they argued that we needed to use military force in order to impose democracy in the Middle East. And I know many of the neoconservatives. They started out as social democrats. Some were socialists. But they broke with the hard left of the Democratic Party back during the Vietnam War. Nonetheless, they're really more Hubert Humphrey, Scoop Jackson, liberal Democrats. They're philosophical liberals, not conservatives, and yet they came to dominate foreign policy in George W. Bush's administration, a very different kind of foreign policy than what we had in the Reagan administration, as he put together a strategy to win the Cold War with very little loss of American military lives. So I think the hardest thing today is a lot of people are confused about what conservatism really is, and that's why I wrote the book, Bringing America Home, with my background, with my history, with my involvement, having been elected state party chairman when George W. Bush was governor, having known the father for a very long period of time, George Herbert Walker Bush, who's a real gentleman but not a philosophical conservative. I just thought it was important to lay out, if you will, why, you know, how they led us astray from what we had going for the country and for the conservative movement and the Republican Party by the time Ronald Reagan left office. And now we're in, I think, worse shape than any time in my lifetime. We've taken the strongest economy in the world, and we're in the most serious national recession since the time of the Great Depression. We were the most respected nation in the world at the end of the Cold War, and now we are effectively isolated and have a confused approach to dealing with the threat of radical Islam. We once were guided by the principles of Christianity, our culture, and now you've got an increasingly coarse culture out there getting away from its traditional roots. And I just think across the board we've wandered away from the founding principles of this country and what those of us who were attracted to the conservative movement in the first place were attracted by. And I think that's why we're not getting as many young people as we did back during the Goldwater period and the Reagan period.
You think young people are just dissatisfied that they see all the phony stuff that's going on, and they don't want any part of it?
Well, I it's a terrific question. I don't have a good answer. I think clearly President Obama was able to attract a lot of young people to his campaign. But many of those young people have since become discouraged and disenchanted. There's a real cynicism out there. But I don't think that I think one of the problems we had is they associated conservatism with Karl Rove, George W. Bush, Richard Dick Cheney, and those are not conservatives. And so we're not laying out a vision of what America needs to do in order to turn itself around to get back on the right track. And I think that's what's missing. And if we can offer that vision, as Ronald Reagan did, as Barry Goldwater did much earlier, then we'll attract young people. But the idea that we're going to attract young people by just being against what the Obama administration is doing, it may help us win an election, as we won some elections in 1994 when Bill Clinton was unpopular. But until or unless you have an alternative a set of solutions to the serious problems, I mean, we've got massive unemployment, the highest since the early 80s, and no plan coming out of Washington to encourage private sector job creation. And we've lost one-third of our U.S. manufacturing base in the last decade. We've got a culture that's in decline, and we're floundering in terms of addressing the threat of radical Islam. So if you can lay out a sound strategic approach to address those issues, then I think the young people will follow.
My guest is Tom Pockin. He is chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission, author of the new book, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. This vision you're talking about that needs to be promoted by Republicans. Is there anybody in the Republican Party that is capable of presenting this vision so that it resonates with young people?
Well, I don't know him personally, but I like what I'm hearing from Paul Ryan, a young congressman from Wisconsin. I think there's some other good people out there. I hope that with the elections coming up in 2010, that we're going to see some fresh faces come on the scene. I like what the new governor of New Jersey is doing, Governor Christie. I think he is he's talking tough, but he's telling the truth. I think people are looking for somebody who will shoot straight. In fact, I like what he said the other day. He said, "Look, I'm I ran on these issues. I'm going to try to do what I can to implement them, and if you want to throw me out 4 years from now, that's fine. But I'm not worried about re-election. I'm worried about what's good for our state." And that's the way Ronald Reagan was. He made some hard decisions that hurt us, actually, in the 1982 midterm elections, but these were decisions based on what he thought was for the good of the country, and in the long term, they were. So I think there'll be some people who bubble up and emerge as serious contenders for president who can get this thing turned around. But I'm not sure that anybody is clearly a front runner at the moment.
Okay. Tom, you're a Republican. Should Republicans bring up social issues this election year when economic issues are kind of a perfect fit for them right now?
Well, I think you need both. I really do. I think you've got to lay out, look, the strength of the Reagan coalition is we had a coalition of social and economic conservatives. And I still remember President Reagan, I think in one of the debates and some of the questioners, I mean, we had pretty tough economic times back then.
Sure did.
Ask him, well, what about this abortion issue? And he said, look, I know it's a tough question, but I've got to come down on the side of life. And guess what? He carried 49 states. It didn't hurt for him to be pro-life. I think you've got to stand for your principles, and even people who disagree with you on a particular issue will respect you, and I think that's what happened, and that's where we've gotten too cute and too political. I use the example. I had some people when I was state party chairman, and I'm pro-life, and said, well, if you just drop that issue, Tom, what you're saying on economics sounds good, but drop that the pro-life issue. And I said, look, if I'm going to abandon my position on that, why do you have confidence I'm not going to abandon my position on keeping taxes low and keeping spending down and running the kind of government that encourages private sector job creation? I mean, you've got to, I think it all fits together. It's very hard to put together a conservative majority. Ronald Reagan was able to do it. It came undone when George Herbert Walker Bush was president. It got briefly put together back when the Republicans seized control of Congress in 1994. But they begin to become enamored by what I call the idea big government was fine as long as our guys were in charge, and fell into the real trap of the Washington mindset. And it all fell apart. And that's, I think you need both the social and the economic conservatives. And all of these things fit together in my way of thinking, as I talk about in the book.
Wasn't it Ronald Reagan who said, it's the economy, stupid?
Well, yes, he did. And at the same, I mean, and guess what? He put in place the Kemp-Roth Job Creation Act. And that was a terrific bipartisan approach to encourage private sector job growth. Now, I much of my book emphasizes the economic issues, and I talk about, look, what the heck has happened? The bubble economy and the destruction of the middle class, how we've taken power away from the Main Street producers, the entrepreneurs, the middle class small business folks, and put it in the hands of what I call the Wall Street financiers. It's because we've got a corporate tax policy which rewards debt, rewards these guys for loading companies up with debt and shipping jobs overseas while penalizing savings and capital investment in order to create private sector jobs here at home. So I lay out a plan to essentially change the dynamics and reward savings and capital investment and bring good American jobs home by getting rid of the corporate income tax and replacing it with a revenue-neutral business consumption tax, border-adjusted consumption tax, which would be on exports coming into the U.S., not on exports leaving the U.S. and going overseas. And we've got to level the playing field with our trading competitors. So in my judgment right now, the number one issue that needs to be addressed is putting Americans back to work and starting to grow our private sector again. But I don't think you can ignore the social issues and ignore also the foreign policy issues.
In your book, you write about reforming the educational system.
Right.
Why does the educational system need to be reformed, and reformed to what?
Okay. Number one, you take the Bush administration, for example, the No Child Left Behind program. We doubled spending in the Bush administration for federal spending on behalf of education, increased the mandates imposed on states around the country. We ought to be going in the opposite direction. I think the Department of Education ought to be a small research arm, and the power and the money ought to be returned to the states and the local communities and let them make the determination how to spend that money at the local and state level, rather than this one-size-fits-all mentality or the idea everybody has to go to a four-year institution. We've gotten away from emphasis on skills training, self-sufficiency, which we do quite a bit of emphasis we place here in Texas at the Texas Workforce Commission on trying to encourage young people to recognize that not everybody's suited for a four-year university, and that they ought to consider, if you will, skills training to get something. You know, there's still a demand for trained workers out there, even in tough economic times. And so greater emphasis at the high school level and in the post-secondary level on skills training is one of the things I talk about. And secondly, there's too much dominance out of Washington and the National Education Association over the content of American education. Again, let's return the power to the local communities and let the people, you know, in Minnesota or in Texas or in California or in New York, which are all very different areas, even in our state, in your state, there are major differences. Let the local people make those decisions with regard to education. And as long as they spend the money properly, I'd rather rely on them than the so-called experts in Washington, D.C.
My guest is Tom Pockin. He is chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission. He is the former head of the Republican Party of Texas, a lawyer, a Vietnam vet, and he served in the Nixon and Reagan administrations, and he's the author of the new book, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. Why did you write the book? Who are you trying to reach with it?
Well, I really wrote it for my children and grandchildren. I'm really trying to reach number one, the young people who are going to inherit this mess that our generation is made of things. And I'm one who is part of that kind of 60s generation that grew up and came to power. But I also wrote it for Americans concerned about what went wrong. I mean, how did all this happen? And what do we do? And there are a lot of people out there who've really given up. They've despaired. They sense that they, you know, one of the biggest questions I get asked when I do radio interviews from callers is, Tom, hadn't it gone too far? I mean, and people that have just given up hope, and so they're going to go back and worry about their own situation and say, I told you so later. And I've been fortunate to, did well in business after taking an involuntary vow of poverty, being state Republican chairman. But I just wrote this book to lay out what we need to do to fix things and get it back on the right track and hopefully reach people so that as they read it, they pass it on and get the word out to others. And it seems to be, you know, it's a small publishing house, but the word seems to be getting around. And as people read it, I've been very pleased. I've had a number of very positive reviews about the book, and the word of mouth is growing.
Do you think it is too late? That it's too late to get back? Can we ever get back to where we were in the 1960s?
Well, I don't think so. I think we can turn around. You've got to make some bold changes. And this is a time that I believe the American people are ahead of the Washington political leaders who I don't think they get it. I think, and on both sides of the aisle, too many of them so focused on re-election, so focused on raising money, they don't look at things beyond the next election cycle. And we've got to start looking at the long term again. So it isn't going to change overnight. But you can't be running the kind of debt levels that we're running right now. I talk in the book about how debt to GDP, that's consumer, corporate, and government debt, in 1981, when Ronald Reagan assumed office, was 91%. At the time of the Great Depression in 1930, it was approximately 300%. Today, it's nearly 400%. And it's growing. I mean, Congress just increased its spending by 17%. The overall federal budget of the Obama administration went up by 14%. We don't have the money.
Yeah.
And we're seeing what's happened with Greece and other European nations and many of our states, which are bankrupt. It's heading our way, and we've got to begin to get it under control, reduce spending, return the power and the money, like what we did in the Reagan administration with welfare reform. The late Bob Carlson was the architect of that. Send the money and power back to the states. We need to do it with Medicaid. We need to do it with education. We need to do it with transportation. Up and down the line, we can do more with less money and break down this incredible monstrosity, this bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., that has grown so enormously from the time when I was a first-year student at Georgetown University from Dallas, Texas. I don't recognize the town anymore.
Is there any reason to think or to hope that a Republican Congress would make any difference?
I think so. Look at what happened in Utah the other day, where Bob Bennett, who didn't get it, I mean, who voted for the bailout of the too big to fail institutions, and came up with a mandatory health care plan similar to what Mitt Romney had done in Massachusetts, even with Mitt Romney introducing him at the convention, a strong, respected Mormon leader. Even with Karl Rove, Bush's political guru out there trying to help him, he didn't make it through the primary. You know, Rand Paul is running in Kentucky. We'll see what happens there. I think there's a real grassroots movement out there that is stronger than anything I've seen. It was stronger than when Ronald Reagan came on the scene, stronger than 1994 when we took back Congress. And I do think the people are paying attention to what these candidates stand for rather than the rhetoric. Everybody claims to be a conservative running on the Republican ticket. It's a question of sorting out who's real, who isn't, and who's going to stick to the principles and compromise only to advance principle, not compromise just to make a deal.
A former Republican, now a Democrat, Arlen Specter, is up for re-election today. Any thoughts on that election?
Well, he was a liberal. He was a liberal back then, and I think I have it in my book. I mean, Karl Rove persuaded Senator Rick Santorum, who was a conservative, to endorse Arlen Specter when he was running for re-election against Pat Toomey, a real conservative. And that proved to be the margin of difference. And Specter's been a liberal. I dealt with him in the Reagan administration. He's more closely identified with the Democrats than the Republicans. It's like Lowell Weicker, and I remember coming out of meetings with their staffs and saying, "Gosh, they might as well be on the other side. They don't have the same mindset we do." So I'm glad to see him leave. I don't care whether he wins or loses. I just hope Pat Toomey wins this time in November. But this is an example. It's just like Charlie Crist and why John Cornyn was given Republican senatorial committee money and supporting Crist in the primary, and then Crist, guess what? He starts losing to Rubio, and now he's running as an independent. These are people who are politicians of convenience, and the times are too serious for these kind of folks. So I hope more and more of them will lose in the primary races.
Lots has been said about the Tea Party movement. Does the Tea Party movement represent authentic conservatism?
It's hard to say. I think that the people, many of the people involved in it, are involved out of frustration, and I think are true conservatives. There are always going to be folks, whenever a movement comes along, who will try to manipulate that movement. And there'll be people doing that this time around as well. It's up to the grassroots to see through that and stick with their principles. But I think it's an encouraging sign to see the bubbling up of these movements around the country, and hopefully it'll sort itself out. It's a bit unfocused at the moment, and there are a lot of people maneuvering for power in the overall Tea Party movement. But I think on balance it's a huge plus, and it just needs to be focused, and you take all that energy and focus in the right direction, it could be an extraordinarily powerful force for the good.
My guest is the chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission, Tom Pockin, and the author of the new book, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. Just a minute or so left, Tom. How would a united conservative movement affect America's future?
Well, I think that all I would say is that when I was part of the Reagan team, looking back on it, you know, you see the serious problems that we had at the time, but a combination of sticking to conservative principles and a team of people working together, it was amazing what we were able to do under the leadership of Ronald Reagan in a 4-year period of time. We can do that again, and that's the real reason I wrote this book, the reason I'm back involved again. In the time I've got left in my life, I want to help turn the ship around in the right direction so that the future for young people is better than what it was for us, and not that we're in a state of decline as we are if we don't change directions, if we don't find our way back. So I think a combination of commitment to principle and a team of people working together, not a bunch of egotists, but a team of people committed to that which is for the good of the country, can make a huge difference in bringing America back.
Tom, do you have a website?
Yes, tompaukin.com, TOMPAUKEN.com, and they can go to the website, get some excerpts from the book, some of the reviews they can take a look at, and also order the book from Amazon.com.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Again, my guest, Tom Pockin, chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission and author of the new book, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back.